Today is November 14th, still is. And we are continuing, remember, with the stories of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that we learned last time. I'm going to summarize the first story in 3 minutes, and then we'll summarize the beginning of the second story and go on with the second story. So first we have to make sure that everyone has the sheets from last week, and if not, I made some copies.
Thank you.
The sheets from last week, it's just here.
What does it look like these days?
I think you weren't here, because I think you were away.
I was away.
Oh, yeah.
There's one for Zona, and there's one for Anne. So I'm not even going to read the first story, not even going to read it. I'm just going to remind you that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said that a man should study Torah all the time, and he should not take any time for worldly profession, not for making money, not for being involved in the fields, not for sowing and not for reaping. And God will provide. God will have our work done by others. On the other hand, Rabbi Yishmael said, no, you have to combine Torah with the worldly profession. And at the end, we heard that later scholars said that many tried the approach Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai of only Torah, and it didn't work. And those who did the approach of Rabbi Yishmael, Torah with a worldly profession, and it worked. So there seems to be a halachic consensus there at the end. Just to go into a little bit of review of the concepts, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says basically the human being is soul. A human being is the spiritual. A human being is made in God's image, and he's supposed to be connecting to God. The body is just a kli, it's just a vehicle. The body is not to be pampered to. You're not supposed to put any energy or importance in the body. It's all about connecting to God. It's all about the spirit. And if you would try to balance, we're using the sheet from last week, and if you would try to balance, balance doesn't work. He says if you get involved in the physical world, it will draw you in and you'll never have any time for Torah. You have to radically devote yourself only to Torah, because that's what man really is. On the other hand, Rabbi Yishmael seems to think that human beings are both body and soul. We're created from the dust of the earth. We're part of the physical world. We also have a soul. We have to balance the two. And he further seems to think, Rabbi Yishmael, that there's some value in this world, there's some value in physicality, there's some value in work. God created the world, and God wants us, Rabbi Yishmael would say, he wants us to work, because remember the end of the first chapter of Genesis, that man was put on this earth to conquer the earth and subdue it. That's what we call tikkun olam, making the world a better place. Working, technology, medicine, advancement, and all different types of fields to make life more comfortable and more successful in the physical plane, that's a value. So Rabbi Yishmael. But Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, no. That was the first point. We spent about half an hour on that last time. Then we got to the second story. Let's remember in the second story what happened. We'll read the very beginning of it. Babylon and Talmud Tractate Shabbat, page 33b. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Shimon, that's our Rabbi Shimon, were sitting, and Yehuda ben Gerim was sitting beside him. Rabbi Yehuda commenced the discussion by observing, how fine are the works of this people, meaning the Romans, who had conquered the land of Israel. It's about the year 100 and 110, 120, 130 of the Common Era. They had made streets. They have built bridges. They have erected baths. Rabbi Yossi was silent. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai answered and said, all that they made for themselves. They built marketplaces to harlots in them. Baths to rejuvenate themselves. Bridges to levy tolls for them. And then what happened is that the Romans put a price on the head of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai for sedition, for speaking against the government. So, what we did is we connected the position of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai here to the previous story. He's not in favor of material culture. He's not in favor of building up the world. He's very suspicious of the bridges, and he's suspicious of the marketplaces. You don't need all of this, because in his opinion, all you really need is Torah, is the spiritual side. And the Romans are coming and imposing their materialistic corporal values upon our Jewish society, which had it not been for them, we would be sitting in the Beit Midrash and studying Torah all day. Let me point out that together with the religious aspect of what we see in the story here, that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is in favor of the spiritual over the material, there's also the political aspect of it. Right? Rome, the conquering nation, represents values that are antithetical to our values. It's not just a discussion on the level of values and religion. It's also politics. He's the nationalist. He doesn't want those Romans in our land imposing their values upon us. He's suspicious of the Romans. Perhaps we'd say he's suspicious of non-Jews in general for the foreign material, corporal values that they bring to the land of Israel. So then remember what happened in the story. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai went into hiding. He went into Beit Midrash, and he learned all day with his son. And it says in the story, I'm in the paragraph at the bottom, he and his son went and hid themselves in the Beit Midrash. And each day his wife brought him bread and a jug of water, and they ate. He lived, we said, like the Israelites in the desert for 40 years, sustained by God with the manna, that's the bread, and the water, the miraculous wells that they found in the desert. He's like living on a totally spiritual plane with God in charge. But when the decree became more severe, he said to his son, women are of a weak temperament, she may be subject to torture and expose us. The phrase in Hebrew is Nashim Datan Kala. Women's da'a, their dat, which means their temperament or their emotions or their intellect is weak, is flighty, is not stable. We're going to talk about that statement, by the way, in the next class about men and women, another hour. So he's afraid she'll be tortured, perhaps from the wording, there's an intimation in sexual torture, and she'll give us away. So they went and hid in the cave. A miracle occurred, and a carob tree and a spring of water were created for them. They would strip their garments and sit up to the necks in sand, so they wouldn't have to wear their clothes. The whole day they studied. When it was time for prayers, they went and robed and covered and went forth and prayed, then put off their garments again so that they would not wear out. Prayer, as we said last time, is considered to be something not spiritual, but something corporal, because prayer, in a Jewish sense, is request for physical needs. So they didn't want to spend time in prayer as little as possible. When they had to pray three times a day, they'd quickly get dressed, say a few prayers, and then take their clothes off again, get back into the sand, and study, because the study is what's really important. So here, think of it, no clothes, no food and water even. They just have the natural sources here from the spring, from the carob tree. They're completely living without human culture, without anything from the material world. They're being sustained by God, and this is exactly what Rabbi Shimon Yochai believes is the exalted state of man. Then Eliyahu comes and tells them that the decree of the emperor has been annulled. They can come back to the world, and I'm in the next paragraph. So they emerged. Seeing a man plowing and sowing, they exclaimed, they forsake eternal life and engage in temporal life. These two men, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son, on such a high spiritual level, disconnected from the corporal, they come out of the cave after all those years, 13 years, and they see people plowing, planting, getting their fingers dirty. That's a waste of time. That's a whole contradiction to what it means to be a human being. And they're so angry and so indignant, so upset by seeing people who don't understand what it means to be a human being, what it means to be a Jew, that wherever they cast their eyes upon was immediately burned up. Such fury, such zealousness, such deep understanding of the truth, that anyone who's not in accord with that is just burnt up and taken out of this world.
I'd call him a terrorist.
With you.
A holy terrorist. Ah, that's all terrorists think, they're holy terrorists. Thereupon a heavenly echo came forth and cried out, have ye murdered to destroy my world? Return to your cave. So God clearly is in favor of the physical world. God is like, you can say, on the side of Rabbi Yishmael. So the two men have to return to their cave, and this time, it's not that they're fleeing from the Romans, they're being punished by God to learn a lesson that there has to be a little bit more respect for God's physical, which he created. It's his world. He wants it to continue. So they returned and dwelt there 12 months, saying the punishment of the wicked in hell is limited to 12 months. So they understood that they're being punished. The wicked in hell only suffer for 12 months, so we don't deserve more than that. We'll wait 12 months, and then we'll come out of our cave. And then a heavenly echo came forth and said, go forth from your cave. So God agreed. It's only 12 months. They came out, and then we have to see if they learned their lesson. wherever Rabbi Elazar smote, Rabbi Shimon healed. Meaning that Rabbi Shimon learned his lesson, Rabbi Elazar didn't. Still, Rabbi Elazar, wherever he looked, wherever he gazed, it turned to bones, to smoke, to ashes. He was full of that zealousness again for the spiritual life and that contempt of the physical world and those who put their time and their efforts into money and into possessions and into plowing and into planting because they just don't understand what it really means to be a human being. They got it all wrong. Rabbi Elazar is still full of that passion. He's a young man, so youngsters are zealots. Rabbi Shimon healed. Wherever Rabbi Elazar looked and it turned to ashes, Rabbi Shimon looked and it was revived. The physical world came back. So Rabbi Shimon has learned not only to appreciate the physical world, but he's even learned to reconstitute it and to fix it, to improve it. Said he to him, the father to the son, "My son, you and I are sufficient for the world." Not exactly clear what that means, but one possibility is, as a unit, we're good to go. Because you have the zealousness and I balance you out, and that's what the world needs. The world needs that balance. Because it's not that Rabbi Shimon learned his lesson, now he's only in favor of the physical and he has given up on the spiritual. No, balance. On the eve of the Sabbath, before sunset, they saw an old man holding two myrtles, bundles of myrtle, and running at twilight. "What are these for?" they asked him. "They're in honor of the Sabbath," he replied. "But one should suffice you." He said, "One is for Zachor and one is for Shamor," the two mitzvot in the Ten Commandments of the Torah. Remember the Sabbath and observe the Sabbath. Some translations have remember and keep. It's the same thing, Zachor and Shamor. So they saw this man who was using the physical world in service of the spiritual, in service of God. Said he to his son, "See how precious are the commandments to Israel." A deep appreciation of that fusion between the physical and the spiritual. Of course, it's Rabbi Shimon saying it, not his son. And then, in some text, the Talmudic passage says, thereupon, their minds were set at ease. In other words, they got it. They accepted this balance, this fusion. Some Talmudic texts don't have that. And the fact that some texts don't have it indicates the ambiguity here. Did they really completely get it, Rabbi Shimon and his son? Or is that still that tension there, especially with the son? That he hasn't reconciled himself completely to the fusion of the physical and the spiritual. That's where we left off last time. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, his son-in-law, heard thereof and went out to meet him. Heard that he's coming out of his cave after all these years, went to meet him. He took him into the bathhouse and massaged his flesh. Now it's really significant that they meet and Rabbi Pinchas brings his father-in-law into the bathhouse. Because the bathhouse is symbolic of Roman culture. It's symbolic of high society, of the accoutrements of cosmetology, of beauty. Take a bath. They take a bath. And it's not just a bath, it's a Roman bathhouse. And Rabbi Shimon does not object to entering to the bathhouse and going into the waters and being soothed and feeling a little bit better on a physical level. So here again we see that he's mellowing out. He's changing his stripes at least to a certain degree. Seeing the clefts in his body, he wept. The son-in-law, so that his father-in-law was really, really, his skin was just broken and it was bleeding probably from all those years without good nutrients, without clothes in the sand. So he's crying for the physical state of his father-in-law. And the tears fell from his eyes and hurt Rabbi Shimon. The salty tears fell into the wounds. "Woe to me that I see you in such a state," he cried out. "Happy are you that you see me thus," he retorted. "For if you did not see me in such a state, you would not find me thus learned." For originally, when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai raised the difficulty in Talmud study, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair would give him 12 answers. Whereas subsequently, after the time in the cave, when Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair raised the difficulty, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai would give him 24 answers. So the idea is still, Rabbi Shimon is willing to go into the bathhouse, willing to avail himself of the niceties of material foreign Roman culture, but he still says, the time I spent in the cave was worth it. Because I learned all that, and I couldn't have learned that had I not been in the cave. In other words, as far as living a life of balance, you could never learn as much, you could never come as close to spirituality in a world of balance as you can in a world of radical spirituality. Right? So he's not, again, he's not completely reconciled to the balance. To a certain degree, yes. To a certain degree, no. And by saying that the only way to attain great heights in Torah study is to be in the cave for so many years and to come out of it with all those cuts and scars on my body, what he's really saying is the only way to reach God is to sacrifice your body. And the minute you're willing to live in a world in which you go to the bathhouse once a week, you'll never reach that high level of spirituality. So it's still a bit of a radical philosophy we have here. It's not that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai has become Rabbi Yishmael. Again, he's willing to go into the bathhouse.
Right.
In the past, he would have just looked at the bathhouse and set it on fire. The next part of the story is obscure, takes a little bit of thinking to understand it, but in the end, very powerful. Since a miracle has occurred, said he, Rabbi Shimon, let me go and fix something. The word for fix is letaken, and it refers to a physical improvement. For it is written, and Yaakov came whole to the city of Shechem. Now, that's a verse in the Torah that Yaakov, after the encounter with Esav, when he came back from Laban, his father-in-law's house, was afraid what Esav was going to do to him, 400 men, he was afraid of being attacked, the whole camp is going to be destroyed. But in the end, he meets his brother, and miraculously they kiss and hug as if nothing ever happened. His brother doesn't want to kill him, and everything turns out happily ever after. The next verse says that Yaakov and his whole entourage came to the city of Shechem, whole. In other words, he survived the encounter. And according to the Midrashic understanding, he had a miracle done for him. God saved him from Esav. Esav reversed his whole course in life. Now Esav loves him. And the Midrash says the following. Yaakov came whole to the city of Shechem. Rabbi Shimon Yochai is thinking these Midrashim, and that's why, it's the explanation, why he wants to do a tikkun. I'll explain. Yaakov came whole to the city of Shechem, which Rav, one of the rabbis, interpreted to mean bodily whole, financially whole, and whole in his learning. He's successful in all those levels. And he was gracious to the city. The next verse in the Torah, after it says that Yaakov came to the city, it says that he encamped in the city. But the word for encamped is the same, is similar to the root for to be gracious. And the Midrash interprets it that he encamped at Shechem and he was gracious to the city. In other words, he did good things for the city. Rav said, how was he gracious? He established coinage for them. He established the mint. Shmuel said, he established markets for them. He did what had to be done to establish places for markets, to organize the commercial enterprises of the city. Rabbi Yochanan said he established bathhouses for them. So that whole Midrash is, as it were, what Rabbi Shimon is thinking, in his mind. And he's saying, look, Yaakov Avinu, Jacob our forefather, had a great miracle done for him. God saved him from Esav. And the next thing that happened, he came to Shechem. And the Midrash says he did good things for Shechem. He established bathhouses, he established coinage, he established markets. So Rabbi Shimon says to himself, a miracle was just done for me, right? I was saved from the Roman decree. They had a price on my head, and now I've escaped. I should also do good things like Yaakov did. And that's why he said, is there aught that requires fixing? Now let's think about this. The Midrash that's brought here with the rabbis Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan they lived after Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai can't be repeating this midrash in his mind because it's 100 years after. Rather, the editor of the story is putting it into his mind to teach us a point. So what's the point? Well, first of all, we clearly see that he's appreciative of the physical world. And he wants to do something good for the physical world in response to the miracle that God did for him. So that's already something that he, again, puts some credence, puts some importance in the physical, corporal world. But more than that, look at the midrash that the editor chose. Here, the three opinions of what Yaakov did for the city of Shechem: establish coinage, establish markets, establish bathhouses.
We've heard that before.
The bathhouses, those are the bathhouses that Rabbi Shimon Yochai condemned. Condemned. That why did the Romans put those bathhouses there? They put bathhouses there to rejuvenate themselves. But now, Rabbi Shimon, in his mind, is seeing the building of bathhouses as something good that you do in response to a divine miracle. In other words, this partnership between God and bathhouses, as it were. Secondly, the Midrash talks about markets. We've seen that before. Those are the markets that Rabbi Shimon condemned. The Romans built markets to put harlots in them. And now, the Midrash that Rabbi Shimon is, as it were, thinking about and trying to emulate, says that our forefather Yaakov built markets as an act of appreciation to God. Complete reversal here. And thirdly, establish coinage for them. How does that relate to the original story of Rabbi Shimon? So not original... Tolls, remember? In the original story, he said bridges, the Romans build bridges only to exact tolls, money. And here comes Yaakov, according to the Midrash, establishing the mint as an act of appreciation to God. So clearly, the editor of this story is trying to tell us that Rabbi Shimon has reversed himself to a large degree concerning his vehement opposition to the physical world. And now he sees these accoutrements of the good life, as it were, not as something that's something in opposition to spirituality, but it's actually part of spirituality. It's a response to God's graciousness to you.
An enhancement.
So that's really something.
Kind of relates to your story you told us.
What do you mean? Reversal?
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
It is.
So just to tell one short story. I was in a panel discussion on Sunday with the Muslims, and one of the questions asked from the audience was, they said, this interfaith dialogue stuff, how do you ensure that you're not influenced by the other religion? Understand? So my Muslim colleague answered and said, you have to be strong and believe in your own religion, education, etc. And when I got the microphone, I said, I'm going to say something radical. Prepare yourself. I said, I came here to be influenced. I came here to look to become a better person. I came here not to come out the same person I walked in. So that's Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was transformed. That's what life is about, transformation. Right? It's not about staying the same. Okay, let's go on. It's called tshuva, right?
Yeah.
It's called tshuva. There is a place of doubtful impurity, he was informed, and it causes trouble for the priest to have to go around it. Well, as we know, priests, kohenim, are not allowed to go to a graveyard. Not allowed to go to a place of impurity, ritual impurity. And if we have a place on the path between the JCC and Tiferet Israel, where there's suspected graves, well, then the kohenim, as they're walking, they're not allowed to go. They have to go all the way around. And Rabbi Shimon was told, if you want to do a good deed for the city, do something about that graveyard that the kohenim always have to go around. They can't make a straight line from Tiferet to the JCC and back. Said he, does any man know if there was a presumption of cleanliness here? In other words, I have to figure out, How we are their graves? Do we know that they're graves? What's going on? A certain old man replied, here and there Ben Azai cut down lupines of truma. In other words, we have a story that a certain rabbi, Ben Azai, a long time ago, used to cut down certain plants here and consider them to be truma for the temple, consider them to be holy. So that proves that at least at certain places where people are suspecting there are graves, actually there's a tradition that there are no graves, that it's a place that is pure. So he did likewise, which might mean that he, from those certain places, he took produce and declared it to be pure and brought it to the temple to show everyone that you're allowed to walk there. Wherever the ground was hard, he declared it clean. While wherever it was loose, he marked. And he went all around and said, could there be a grave here? No, the ground is so hard, this has never been dug up. This area, he put a big sign, clean. Where there was loose ground, he said, here the coin can't go, but they can walk right next to it. But he prepared a path through the suspected graveyard. Said a certain old man, Bar Yochai is declared a pure cemetery. In other words, he got flack from the reactionaries, from the conservatives with the small c. How can you take a place that ever considered to be a graveyard and now tell us the Kohenim could walk through it? You're too considerate. You're too liberal, would be the word we'd use today. Said he. In other words, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the radical zealot, has been called a liberal. Said he, had you not been with us, even if you had been with us, but had not voted with us, you might have spoken well. But now that you were with us and voted with us, it will be said, even whores paint one another, how much more so should scholars? He cast his eye upon him and he died. What happened? Rabbi Shimon said to the guy, look, I had apparently collected all the scholars, we talked about this, we voted about it, you were there. Now that you accepted the vote, you're criticizing me? You're not even as good as a prostitute. Because prostitutes paint one another. In other words, prostitutes, they help each other with their cosmetics. They appreciate each other. There's a certain human bond between them. And you don't even have the same courtesy for me that two fellow prostitutes have for each other. And Rabbi Shimon looked at him and he went up in a whiff of smoke. So Rabbi Shimon now is zealous for the liberal side of things. So a few points. Rabbi Shimon has come to appreciate the physical world. Right? He's now involved in tikkun olam. He's now involved in making a bridge. The Kohenim used to have to go around that. He can go straight through. He's building a bridge, just like the Romans build bridges. He's helping commerce and transportation. He's not just sitting in the Beit Midrash. And he also appreciates the prostitutes that he had so much disrespect for. Remember the prostitutes?
Yeah.
It's no coincidence that the editor put into his mouth this particular parable, this particular aphorism of respect for prostitutes. He's really become a person that can appreciate the nuances. Some things are bad, but in the bad, there's even a little bit of good. End of the story. Then he went out into the street and saw Yehuda ben Gerim. I left out a word. That was the original guy who informed upon him. That man is still in the world, he exclaimed. He cast his eyes upon him and became a heap of bones. So how does the story end? Rabbi Shimon is still a zealot. He's still the same man. But at the same time, there's a zealot. And he has great fire and passion. He's also learned to a large degree to balance his understanding of the values of life. And I think he's balanced them not only in the level of the physical and the spiritual, but also on the level of relationship to the conquering Romans. Not only does he appreciate the physical world more and give credence to the physical world, and he's able to balance them to a certain degree, he's also showing a little bit of appreciation for the things that the Romans have brought to the Jewish culture of the land of Israel.
Appropriate. I mean, the whole issue of assimilation, or like you talked about, you know, living in America and all that kind of thing. I mean, it really is very telling.
Yeah. So we won't have time to do more, but I wanted, had we had more time, I would have liked to have showed how you can find statements of Shimon Bar Yochai in the Talmud, some of them very radical, perhaps reflecting his previous approach, and some of them showing a new found appreciation for nuance and tension.
Mellowing.
Yeah. And the issue is, do you have to go through such extremes to be able to achieve balance? I mean, the other rabbi,
Rabbi Yishmael, was born with balance.
Yeah.
Matter of personality.
I have a 92-year-old man.
Right. Okay. So everyone, not next week, but I will make that announcement. That Rochelle made. Let me make that announcement once again, and let me add to the announcement.